All right, welcome back into Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. With me is Bryant Knox. You can find him on Twitter, at Bryant Knox. Find him at Oregon Sports News. He's doing a great series this week with a fellow writer, Jared Wright, also of Oregon Sports News, on the Blazers and five players that they are profiling. Make sure you check that out. It's a great series. They do it every year. Bryant, we've been talking NFL football, so let's dive into some week two preview. The first game on the list is Thursday night's game, which is kind of a blah game based on how the two teams played this past Sunday. One is Houston, who got, you know, insert expletive here, handed to them by Jacksonville, which no one saw coming. I don't think even Jacksonville would tell you they saw that coming. And the other team is the Bengals, who Andy Dalton, I don't know if he realizes he doesn't play for Baltimore, but he sure threw to Baltimore a lot, handed them the ball a lot. We warned our listeners that you were going to get a live prediction forced on you, and here it is. Of those two amazing quote-unquote teams, who's winning that game and why?
Look, man, it's basically for me what it comes down to is that it's really tough to, put lipstick on the pig that was the Texans season opener.
Right.
A 29-7 loss is always bad. A 29-7 loss at the hands of the Jags is always really bad. And a 29-7 loss to the Jags at home is about as bad as it gets. But then on top of that, you throw in the fact that J.J. Watt was as emotional as he was. The Texans crowd was as emotional as he was. The team was as emotional as he was. I mean, it was the picture-perfect opener against really one of the picture-perfect teams to get your season started off on the right foot. But then again, it's nearly impossible to win a football game when you only muster up 203 yards on offense, even when you hold a team like Jacksonville to just 280 yards on the other side.
Right.
So, I mean, for me, it's not as if the Bengals gave us a showing worthy of earning their trust going into week two. But you talked about their turnovers. The Texans committed four turnovers themselves, which, you know, admittedly isn't going to happen every week, probably won't even happen this week. But until we see them take care of the ball and produce, you know, a lot better on offense and produce a similar defense against a better team, it's hard to trust them. So I'm going Cincy in this one.
Fair enough. You know, I would say, gun to my head, I would bet on the Bengals. With my intense, I would rather not bet on either team. You know, if this could just not happen at all, I might be even happier about that. But, you know, I'm curious to see what Deshaun Watson does with his first career start. You know, he came in the second half last week and he did okay. He did not do good. He didn't do great. He had an impressive first drive, and after that it was a bunch of nonsense. And he's probably better than Tom Savage, but no one knows for sure. Curious to see how the Watson-Hopkins connection looks. You've also got Lamar Miller, who's an underrated running back. But that's really it. That's the talent on offense. That's all you really have. And their offensive line looked terrible. I mean, even if Dwayne Brown comes back this week, I'm not sure they really have a good offensive line. But on defense, they're one of the best in the business. And Romeo Crennel is a great defensive coordinator. No, sorry, he's the Chiefs' defensive coordinator. But anyway, they have a great defensive coordinator. They're great at stopping the run, great at stopping the pass, and the Bengals didn't look like they could do either last week. So this one's tough for me, but I agree with you. I'm going to take Cincinnati.
Yeah, and if I were a true betting man, since he enters this game, at least at this point in the week, as a 6.5-point favorite, and I would say that, yes, I would pick Cincinnati straight up. But for them to win by 6.5 points, I don't know if I'm buying that. I get that Houston's offense looks, you know, like garbage, and that Cincy's defense is going to have a field day with it. But I think that if Cincy can control the ball and not turn it over, maybe the 6.5 is reasonable. But you know, as much as I'm going Cincy straight up, I'm probably picking Houston against the spread if it stays at 6.5.
And our intern Gene just handed me an on-air correction. Romeo Crennel is, in fact, the defensive coordinator for the Houston Texans. And Gene asked me to stop blabbering about stuff that I clearly don't know what I'm talking about. So thanks, Gene. Good work, happy Gene. To have you on the staff. You know, really going to go talk up that raise for you now, pal. Appreciate it. So there's that's a game that we have to watch. It's Thursday night. And even though Amazon Prime is starting to stream the games as of 9:28, they're not there yet. These Thursday night games are kind of duds. You know, we had an okay one last week with the Patriots and the Chiefs, but that was the kickoff. This week we get Texans and Bengals. I don't even want to look at what the next week is. But the last week of the month, Amazon will start streaming those games on Prime. So if you have a Fire Stick or any Blu-ray player that has, or a TV that has smart TV capability or apps on it, and you have Amazon Prime, you can watch that game. If you have, you know, just the NFL Network, you can watch it as well, but some of us don't have that, so you never know. There's a lot of duds this week, though, Bryant. You got, you know, the Browns at the Ravens. I can't imagine you're excited about that one. The
It's definitely not set to record on my DVR, I can tell you that much.
So here's the games that you're on your own if you want to watch them. We'll just list those off real quick. You got the Browns at the Ravens, the Bears at the Buccaneers, the Titans at the Jaguars, the Cardinals at the Colts, the Bills at the Panthers, the Jets at the Raiders, the 49ers at the Seahawks, the Dolphins at the Chargers, Redskins at Rams, and the Lions at the Giants. You know, you being a Dolphin fan, I'm sure you'll check out the Dolphins-Chargers game. Is that a game you're really excited to watch because it's a great matchup, or are you excited to watch that because it's your team and you haven't seen them yet?
Yeah, I mean, even beyond that, I'm just genuinely curious about the Jay Cutler experiment. You know, I won't go too deep into it since I already rambled on it a little bit, but I'm just very, very genuinely excited to see how that works. Excited's probably not even the right word. Cautiously optimistic, scared to death, somewhere in between those two. So
right.
I mean, from a football standpoint, it may not be the most entertaining game, but from a casual fan standpoint, I think it is going to be very interesting to see what Cutler does in a familiar system, but a run heavy system that's just going to utilize his deep arm with a couple deep threats.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what the Cutler to Landry and Cutler to Parker connection looks like. He's also got Julius Thomas, and we know he really liked throwing to Martellus Bennett in Chicago when he was there, you know, all that time ago. You know, I know he was an announcer for about 6 minutes, but just seems weird to talk about him like he was, you know, a former Bear way down the line, not last season, way down the line. There's some other games, a handful, that I think will really pique people's interest, and they definitely have mine. First is Eagles at Chiefs. You know, the Eagles had a really good showing against Washington last week. I like what I'm seeing from Carson Wentz in year two. I really like what Doug Peterson's offense is doing. He and Frank Reich are really calling a lot of really fun plays for that offense and keeping them exciting and moving the ball down the field. The defense is great. Jim Schwartz has an attacking unit. I'm curious to see how that all works against Andy Reid's offense and the Chiefs. They, you know, quote unquote, blew out the Patriots last week. I'm not sure that was really a blowout so much as just a total malfunction on the Patriots' part. Is this a game you're tuning in to see, or is this one that you just might check out how it's going when you're checking your fantasy scores?
Yeah. I mean, I'm tuning in actually mostly for Kareem Hunt. Fantasy scores aside, which isn't totally aside because, as I already mentioned, I am biased there.
Right.
But, I mean, we enter this week, and he, I'm pretty sure, is the number one running back in the league in terms of yards.
Number one.
Which, by the way, I'm pretty fascinated that three of the top five rushing leaders through week one are rookie running backs. Yep. I find that pretty fascinating. But as far as Hunt is concerned, I am definitely tuning in to see what he can do. I'm also tuning in because I love watching former head coaches from one team play their former team.
Right.
I am very fascinated by it because I feel as if the former staff has insight into tendencies and play calling strategies. And yes, you know, the system's going to change from one team to the next. But I mean, this staff, including Doug Peterson, knows Andy Reid and knows his general MOs.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, for that reason alone, I'm pretty interested to see if the Eagles can come out and put together a really strong strategy, knowing what they know about Andy Reid.
Well, it'll be interesting because Doug Peterson was Andy Reid's offensive coordinator until 2 years ago. So it'll be curious to see, does Andy Reid know a little bit about Doug Peterson that he can give his defensive coordinator? And does Doug Peterson know enough about Andy Reid to hand some of those notes over to Jim Schwartz? That's what I'm really curious to see, is how do these two guys try to outsmart each other about what they may or may not know?
Yeah, I think Andy Reid definitely is overlooked at times. Just because he has become something of a character within the league. And as soon as that happens, you lose a little bit of credibility. But the fact is, he has gone up throughout his career. He's gone up against 11 of his former assistants turned head coaches, and he's 8-3 in those games. So I think that Doug Peterson definitely has an advantage that other coaches don't have against him. But I also think that he has an advantage against Peterson that many others won't have as well. So I'll be tuning in to see sort of, which aspect, which end of the spectrum between those two coaches outweighs the other.
Well, and the other thing is you mentioned Kareem Hunt's the leading rusher in the NFL. Absolutely true. The other thing that you might not know is Alex Smith is the leading passer in the NFL. So
I did know that. And I think that, you mentioned the Chiefs.
Sam Bradford, number two.
You mentioned the Chiefs earlier and how far they can go. I think that, if they were to go, as you mentioned earlier, the distance, they would have to get this unsustainable trend with both Hunt and Alex Smith to be sustainable. There's no way beyond this next week or the week after they're both going to lead the league in their respective offensive categories. It's just not going to happen. But if they want to find true big time success, those are the things that we'll have to maintain, and I don't really see that playing out.
I don't either, but it'll be fun to see if it continues at least for week two. That'd be pretty exciting for both of them and all of us watching and listening as well.
That's why I'm tuning in.
Exactly. So another game we have on the docket is the Patriots at the Saints. Now, both of them were losers in week one. The Saints lost on the road. The Patriots lost at home. Both of them lost to worthy opponents, the Chiefs and the Vikings. Both of them are, top five defenses. Both of them are top 10 offenses when they want to be. They don't always end up that way, but they have the capability at least. So through 1 week, those two teams have played what amounts to the number one and number two offense in the NFL, and they both lost. So who do you like in that game, and are you going to tune in?
I'm not going to tune in. I think the Pats bounce back. But the reason I'm not going to tune in is because I appreciate a good, hard-fought, physical football game. And this is going to be an absolute barn burner. This is the type of game that actually makes me glad I don't own NFL Red Zone, because all the scoring drives, you're never going to get a word in with any other football game that day. I mean, you mentioned the offenses, but I think what's equally as important is that the Patriots gave up 537 yards last week, which were the worst in the NFL. The Saints gave up 470 yards, which were the second worst. So you have two elite offenses, two defenses that, yes, as I mentioned, I think the Patriots are going to bounce back, and they're not going to put together that sort of a lame duck showing, especially on defense.
Sure.
But I think it's going to be a shootout, and I would much rather just watch the highlights at the end. That said, I would love to see Brandon Cooks have the game of his life against his former team. I'm not necessarily a Cooks fan. As an Oregon alum, I don't think I'm allowed to be. But, I mean, he had three catches for an impressive 88 yards last week, but he and Brady were never able to reach the end zone. I would love to see him get into the end zone against his old team, like, three or four times. I know that's not an easy ask, but that's what I want to see.
Three or four, we're not.
If it were more reasonable for me to ask for 18 touchdowns from him, I'd already been asking for it.
Fair enough.
I just want to see him have the game of his life. So give me three or four scores. I feel like this is a common theme here. I'm not biased, I swear. He's on my fantasy team, though. So maybe I want to see him have three or four touchdowns for that reason. But still, he's a local kid to an extent. And again, I don't think I'm allowed to be a true fan of his. But I do love revenge games in any sport, basketball, football, you name it.
Right.
And so for him to get, a huge game, see him go for, 100 plus, a couple scores, I would be all about it.
Well, I've got Michael Thomas on my team, so I'll be glad to see him reap the benefits of Brandon Cooks no longer being in that offense and maybe getting 2 to 3 scores of his own. He didn't have a very strong week one, but he wasn't playing the Patriots, so who knows?
Sure.
So the other game we've got is the Packers at the Falcons, a rematch of the NFC Championship game. The NFC Championship game that did not live up to the hype. It was supposed to be one of the highest scoring playoff games ever. One side showed up, that was the Falcons. The other side, Green Bay, decided that a nap sounded more interesting, and that's exactly what they did in the first half. They were asleep. So I'm excited to see this one. It's a Sunday night game. Hopefully it's not the snooze fest that the Giants and Cowboys was last week. You know, if you really liked 3-yard runs, that was the game for you. If you liked punts, the Seattle Green Bay game was the game for you. I like to see scoring. So call me a modern NFL fan. I like to see points on the board. So I'm hoping that this won't be just a huge scoring explosion. It's the Falcons' first game in their new stadium. They had a sloppy game at Chicago last week. They're indoors this week, in home. Green Bay plays well indoors. Both of the teams have great, maybe even overrated offenses, and both of them have underrated defenses, although Atlanta's is definitely better. Who do you like in this one and why?
Well, I like the Packers for a few reasons, and you know, I try not to buy into trends too much because anything can happen in any given game. But you know, there's a few that really stick out with this game, and you know, if you, as you mentioned, you're a scoring guy, you're a guy who likes to see the ball go into the end zone. There's a few reasons that you'll probably want to check this one out too. Things look like they're going to go Green Bay's way. And again, based on certain trends, Aaron Rodgers, he's faced the Falcons 5 times during the regular season. And during those 5 games, he completed nearly 70% of his passes for 1,600 plus yards, 13 touchdowns with, get this, only one interception with a passer rating of 118. So Aaron Rodgers is, you know, looking for an efficient game here. But at the same time, 9 of the last 10 regular season matchups between these two have been decided by 8 points or fewer, including 6 by only 3 points or fewer. So it's going to be an efficient offensive game if the trend holds up, but it's also going to be a good game, which is why I'm definitely tuning in. And, you know, based on what it sounds like you're looking for, it looks like you should probably tune in as well.
Yeah, I'm going to. And, you know, not only is this a chance for Green Bay to redeem themselves after a really poor showing in the NFC Championship game, but, you know, that game was supposed to be a rematch for them to redeem themselves from the regular season last year. You know, they played the Falcons in, I want to say, week 2 or week 3, and I believe they lost 34-31, something like that. And it wasn't an embarrassing loss. It was just their defense got destroyed. They actually lost 33-32 in week 8, so was way off. Gene, I can see you over there shaking your head. I get it. My facts were not straight. I'll work on it. Don't take this to management. I will work on it. But
keep him honest, Gene.
Thanks, Gene. Appreciate it. You're awesome, buddy. Beer's on us tonight. But that was the thing is, you know, they had lost to the Cowboys. They had barely beat the Bears. And then they go into the Georgia Dome to play the Falcons. They lose by 1 point on the road. That was during the bad part of the season where they lost 4 straight. They should have had a chance to get that game back, but they blew it. And so now here we are again. It's not a game that means much. It's only week 2, but you know, Atlanta needs to get over the hump because they didn't play very well last week, and they played even lousier in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl. Green Bay played okay in week 1. They got a win. Maybe they deserved it. Maybe they didn't. The officials played great in that game, so maybe they deserve the win more than anybody. But they didn't show up in the NFC Championship. So this is the game for both teams to really fight for redemption. And I like the Packers in this one, but Atlanta has an offense that can explode in any second. I just wonder if Steve Sarkisian is the right play caller for that offense because they didn't look very strong in Chicago.
Yeah, I think you make a lot of good points. But, you know, even beyond just the Aaron Rodgers, Green Bay versus Atlanta, Rodgers is a pretty ridiculous quarterback in indoor games in general. You know, he throughout his career has 59 touchdowns to just 12 interceptions in indoor games. And, you know, include the fact that he now has a little bit of a revenge factor in this one. I think that you definitely have potential for, you know, kind of like the last game that we talked about. You have potential for it to be a barn burner. And I think that Green Bay sneaks out a close, high-scoring win in this one.
And I think they will, and I think it'll be a really high-scoring game. And Green Bay is healthy for the first time in over a year. Atlanta's also healthy. I really want to see this game go the distance and really show us, you know, a 45-42 kind of game, and just whoever has the ball last wins. And at that point, I won't be disappointed either way. I'll just love watching it. So that's really all the marquee matchups we have for this week. I mean, there's a couple others in the Cowboys at the Broncos. Both teams have kind of so-so offenses, and Broncos defense maybe not as good as it used to be. And so I'm not really sure if that's an exciting matchup. I'm sure if you're a fan of those two teams, you'll like to watch it. But if you're just an average fan, maybe that's not the one for you. The other one is the Monday night game, Lions at Giants. Both teams have kind of stunk the last couple of years. We'll see if the Giants can show up with an offense this week. The Lions sure showed up at the end of the Cardinals game last week and blew out Arizona. We'll see if they can do that on the road this week against a really talented offense that just doesn't score very much. So I don't know how talented they really are, but Eli Manning's a two-time Super Bowl winner, and he's got some great receiving weapons, so we'll see about that one. Who do you like in those games, Bryant? Cowboys and Broncos and Lions and Giants?
I like the Giants to bounce back. I think, you know, getting OBJ back will certainly help. I have to assume Brandon Marshall's going to do more than he did in week one.
It would be hard not to.
It would be really hard not to.
If he just shows up, it's good enough. Just be there.
Pretty much.
Be on the field.
What was the other game that you mentioned?
Cowboys and Broncos.
Cowboys and Broncos. Yeah, you know, I'm going Cowboys on this one, and, you know, I can't remember what the exact number is. I they've won something like 13 or 14 of their last regular season games, and obviously between one season to the next, you can't really look at a stat like that, but their roster is largely the same. As you said, Denver's defense isn't quite as dominant as it was in recent history, but that said, what I do remember is that two of those two or three losses did come on the road. And the Broncos have won their last four or five meetings with the Cowboys dating way back to the early 90s, which was the last loss against them. So I think that there is some both recent history and, you know, franchise to franchise multiple decade long history, you know, that's going to be at stake here. But to me, it just, there's more of a recency play that I got to go with the Cowboys.
I like it. I think the Cowboys will win that one. I think it'll be a hard-fought game, and maybe Denver's defense is better than they showed against San Diego, but I think it'll be a fun one. I think Elliott will have some good yards, and we'll see what Denver can do on offense. We'll see if that Dallas defense is as good as they looked against New York. I don't think they are, but we'll see if they can do it. Let's shift over to college football. We've got just a few minutes left on the show. We're getting close to the hour mark, and we try to make sure people get on with their lives. You know, we enjoy that people stay here and listen to us ramble about sports, but they've got lives to lead and bathroom breaks to take, and we appreciate that. So, moving over to the Oregon Ducks, you being an Oregon alum, how satisfying is it for them to start 2-0 after the season you went through last year?
It was very satisfying, and I, you know, even beyond just the record itself, I am very, very pleased to see that Willie Taggart has just pumped some life back into the Oregon Ducks program. You know, it was so, so stale by the end of the Mark Helfrich era, and it wasn't necessarily Helfrich's fault because he did exactly what the Oregon Athletic program asked him to do, and that was try to be Chip Kelly 2.0. It just so happened that, surprise, surprise, he was not Chip Kelly 2.0. And so not only were you in a losing season, but you were in a very stale, you know, not so politically correct, but wannabe system. And right. So when people realized that he was not what the program wanted him to be, they really just lost interest. And you could tell it on the field. I know there were quotes from players, some of the you know, upperclassmen saying that the younger guys just didn't have enough pride to go out there and play in losing games. And so Taggart came in. He's really added a bit of a swagger to the team. You know, I was at the game this past weekend against Nebraska, and the team just looks like it's having fun out there every single possession, which coming from a team that got so stale and only won four games a year ago, and at times looked and sounded as if they were quitting, that's really all you can ask for in a rebuilding program. So, yeah, I love the 2-0 record. There are some questions on the field. None more pressing than how do you go 42 against, I think, 14 in the first half and then end up winning a football game 42-35. That's a bit concerning. But overall, I really like what I see.
Yeah, I think they definitely got complacent in that second half. And that's one of the, you know, people talk about momentum not being a real thing. But when you think you've got a game won going into halftime, it is really hard to come back out in the second half and really fight for it the way Nebraska did. And, you know, the fact they were able to pump the brakes and keep Nebraska from taking the victory, that's outstanding. But they've definitely got to review what happened in the second half and see how they can keep the first half being the trend and the second half being the anomaly. So we'll see what they can do this week. They get Wyoming, you know, there's Alabama and there's Wyoming, you know, 1A, 1B, you know, obviously just a huge matchup. Is this a game you're going to tune into? I mean, obviously as an Oregon fan, you're going to watch it, but is it one that you're like setting the schedule for on Saturday?
No, certainly not. I'm going to watch it to see if they have corrected some of those second half issues, because I do expect that they will jump out to a decent, first quarter lead that will turn into a decent second quarter lead, not unlike they did against Nebraska. And it really just comes down to, like you said, do they stay complacent? Do they go with the same game plan? Do they continue to utilize the passing game, or do they switch over to the running game? Now, I will say just real quickly, I don't have a huge problem with them changing their game plan to a run-heavy system because, you know, Herbert had 300-plus yards and three touchdowns with no picks in the first half, and they went away from that in the second half. But I don't have a huge problem with that because you have one of the best running backs in all of college football, right, and Royce Freeman there. It's just a matter of executing. It's a matter of getting him in a place where you are utilizing him and you are running the football, but you're not being predictable about it. And so that's what I want to see in this game, because I think Oregon will be in a similar situation, maybe not quite as high scoring of a first half, but a similar situation come the third quarter.
And I think that it'll be a not necessarily an easy win for them, not like Southern Utah was, but I think it'll be a win for them that they'll have in the bag, and hopefully they don't have to play their starters in the fourth quarter, but you never know. Wyoming's got a pretty talented quarterback that it's not really all they have, but that's definitely their best player, and we'll see how that goes for them. That can usually translate to some first-half struggles, and then once the defense figures them out and makes the halftime adjustments, they'll shut them down, and we'll send the upperclassmen home. Coming up in Oregon's schedule, you have at Arizona State, home against California, home against Washington State, at Stanford, at UCLA, home against Utah, at Washington, home for Arizona, and home for Oregon State. Which of those games are you circling as ones that you have to see, and which ones are you worried about that could potentially be Oregon's first loss?
Well, I'm circling the game against Oregon State because I'm excited to see the first time Oregon reaches 100 points.
At Autzen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kid a little bit.
He's an Oregon alum, guys. He's allowed. He can do this.
The Civil War is always one to circle. I don't think it's going to be very competitive this year unless the Ducks really lose some life out of their system right now. But I'm really intrigued by the Washington State game, to be honest, because I think that Oregon's defense still has a lot to prove. I think that they have a new defensive coordinator who, again, like a Willie Taggart, is pumping a little bit of life, a little bit of energy into a system that needed it. But on defense, life and energy aren't going to get it done. Executing is. And you're going to go up against a very high-powered offense in Washington State. I mean, I joked that you might have 100 points against Oregon or against Oregon State, this Oregon-Washington game, you might get 100 points apiece. And it's one of those games where, I mean, you could legitimately see that game come down to who gets the one or two key stops and somebody wins, you know, 60 to 57. It's going to be an incredibly high-scoring game. So if you're into that, definitely tune in. I'm tuning in because I want to see specifically how the defense reacts.
And then Washington comes up on November 4th. Well, Oregon goes up to Washington on November 4th. How nervous are you for that game after what you saw last year?
Last year was definitely a shock. I think that nobody was surprised Washington came away with the win, but I think that a lot of diehard Oregon fans were still looking at the streak. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was 10 or 11 wins in a row of at least 17 points apiece. And then Oregon just got the floor wiped with them against the Huskies at home. So I do think you end up with a much better game, a competitive game through at least, you know, half, if not three quarters of the contest. But I think that Washington is still just on another level. I think that in order for that game to be competitive in the fourth quarter, you're going to have to, by that point, either realize that Oregon is way, way better than we thought they were, or Washington has taken a legitimate step in the wrong direction this season. And I'm not sure either of those will ever come to fruition this year.
So, making your prediction now, what is Oregon finish at the end of the season, record-wise?
Yeah, but preseason, I pegged them at 8 wins. You know, I'm not going to change that quite yet until I see the conference play begin. I think that Nebraska was a good test for them. I thought that they had, you know, potential to drop that one in dramatic fashion. And the fact that they came out of it means good things for the program. But I'm not willing to change my 8-win prediction until I start to see how they play against Arizona and Cal, and then specifically that Washington State game, because I think that this team's ceiling is a 9-win team. And I know that that's a huge leap from 4 wins the year before, but I do think it's doable with a healthy Royce Freeman and an efficient Justin Herbert. The problem is, I think that this team's basement is about a 6-win team. And again, we're not going to really see which side they're closer to until we get a couple Pac-12 games under our belt.
So if your prediction is 8 wins, and I think that's a reasonable answer, and their ceiling is 9, they're coming away with at least 2, if not 3 losses this year. Where do you think those losses are coming?
I would put the L on Washington. That's kind of a given at this point, like I said, unless one of the two programs or both of the two programs are surprising in opposite directions.
Right.
I'm not huge on Stanford this year, but I just think they are too physical and they have enough skill positions to go ahead and make that the difference in that game. So I'm giving them a loss to Stanford. And I'm going to be honest, I think one of the trap games, and it's not really a trap game because they are higher rated at this point, but one of the biggest trap games is Washington State. I do Right. think that Washington State offense probably drops a 50 burger on the Ducks, and if the Ducks struggle even a little bit on offense, that's going to be a huge game that they just don't really stand a chance in from the beginning. I think there's potential there to be a step or two behind from the outset, and even though it never feels out of reach, it's never quite within reach in reality.
I think that's a very reasonable expectation, and Washington State being just a ridiculous offense, and they've got a running game, and the defense isn't as bad as people think it is. I think that could definitely be a loss for Oregon. I'd hope it's not. I hope they surprise them, but I could easily see the Cougars coming away with a victory in that one. So switching gears to our last segment, Oregon State, you're an Oregon alum, Oregon grad. What if you weren't? What if you had gone to Oregon State? And I'll let you shudder off air. You need to answer the questions on the air. How do you feel about this season? You're 1-2. Your only win is a win over Portland State, which you can thank your team as much as their kicker for that one. How do you feel about this season? This was supposed to be year 3 of the Gary Anderson project, and he was going to take you a leap forward. I'm not seeing the big change that we were advertised. Where is this team going?
Well, that is the ultimate question. You know, all previous jokes aside, because of my personal bias, this team, where is it going? Nobody really knows. This team has lacked an identity for a very long time now. And Gary Anderson coming in, he was supposed to help shape that identity, and he just hasn't been able to. I do think that, you know, this team, you know, I can't remember exactly where it was, but somebody asked offensive coordinator Kevin McGivern, asked him which miscues from this past week can be immediately corrected. And his response was very candid: to be corrected. And, you know, I don't think that's the most politically correct answer for a coach, but I think it is the most correct answer for this particular coach, because he's right. It's not as if the Beavers are running a traditionally inefficient system. It's not as if they are confused as to what they're running on the field. They are just not able to execute it. You know, a guy like a Ryan Nall is supposed to be kind of their bread and butter. And I'm not saying that by the time the season ends, he won't be. I just don't think he's the kind of guy you can build a program around. And it's, again, it's not that the system itself isn't, because, you know, if you miss a protection on a one-on-one block, or if your quarterback doesn't open target, those are indications that the system is actually working, because you've got guys in the right spot. It's just the guys on the field not getting it done. So, you know, again, where is this team going? We don't really know, because there aren't many changes you can make. You kind of just have to hope for the best with these guys. Now, all that said, Seth Collins is listed as, I believe he's been upgraded to probable after missing the first three games. And, you know, I don't think inserting him into the lineup makes the biggest of differences, because this team is as flawed as it is. But the truth is that having any extra weapons is going to be huge for them. And so getting him on the outside, I don't know if they plan on using him in some of the old traditional, you know, OSU jet sweeps that they used to do with the Rodgers brothers. I would love to see him in that sort of familiar system. I don't think that he makes this season for them, but I do think he makes the team at least worth watching. Assuming he's healthy, assuming he's in shape. So this team is going to struggle the entire year. I think from a legitimate, you know, Pac-12 fan standpoint, or, you know, if you are an Oregon State fan, I think that you can hope for some big moments and some big plays and a couple close games. But it's going to be a rough season this year.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know how popular this will be with the average Duck fan, but I'm really hoping that this rivalry is restored the next year or two. I really want to see both of these teams be really good the whole season and then be battling for a Rose Bowl berth or a college football playoff berth in the Civil War as their sayonara to the regular season. For a really long time, the Civil War was like a showdown between two really, really good teams, and it has not been that way for quite a long time. Yes, the Beavers broke the trend last year and won the Civil War, but it wasn't a quality win over a quality opponent. It was a win over a four-win team. It's not exactly like Oregon was a national championship contender or even a Pac-12 contender. I want to see it go back to the days where the Civil War decides who goes to the Rose Bowl or who goes to college football playoff berth. As an Oregon fan and an Oregon alum, is that your take, or do you like seeing Oregon just beat the Beavers into a pulp every year?
No, that's my take. You know, I've never bought into the big brother, little brother complex that I know that a lot of the casual fans like to point to. You know, I do think that there was a lot of hope that last year's Civil War was an indication of, you know, this rivalry being back to what it was supposed to be. But I think we realize now within a couple games of this season that that was far more of an indictment on how bad both teams were than a testament to how close the rivalry was. And I think that, you know, again, kind of like we were talking about with Washington, unless either the Beavers prove to be much better than they've shown early on, or the Ducks prove that this hype is not worth it at this point, and they sort of even out by the end, I don't think this is the year where the rivalry jumps back up. I think we're still a couple years away.
So looking at Oregon State's schedule before we have to sign off for the night, they've got Washington State this week, then Washington, then USC, then Colorado, then Stanford, then Cal, Arizona, Arizona State, and they finish at Oregon. Of those games, which are the ones you would circle as a win for them?
Or are there any? Do I have to circle any?
You don't have to. Just we appreciate Beaver fan, and we want to give them an optimistic look. Your season's not in the toilet, but it's not in the championship game either. We're hoping that they can be, you know, a middle-of-the-road team, get a handful of wins. You know, maybe they're not in a bowl game this year, but maybe they take an important next step towards a winning season next year. Where do they get those wins, though? Washington State's probably a long shot, same with Washington and USC, but what about Colorado or Cal or Arizona and Arizona State?
Well, the middle two teams are where I'm giving them wins this year. You know, I think that the hope of them being a middle-of-the-pack team is a little bit ambitious. I think that if they do prove to be middle of the Pac-12, that's going to be considered a win for them, especially the way that the first three games have played out. But I think that Cal is very vulnerable. Arizona is in a very similar spot where they need to figure out their identity. It seemed like we knew it for a little bit in the early Rich Rod era. But, I mean, last year, if I remember correctly, they only won three football games. And so I think that Cal, which was a 4 or 5 win team last year, Cal and Arizona, they are the most vulnerable. That an Oregon State team could probably come in, be very physical, get a guy like Anahl to really take over the offense and really set the tone. I think those are where you probably see the wins. Now, the demoralizing part of that is that those are two late season games, which means you probably have a whole bunch of losses going up to that point. So if you're Oregon State, you can look at that and say, great, we're getting a little bit of momentum before, you know, the Civil War, before the year comes to a close. But you would really, really like to get a couple of those wins early on in the year. That way you could at least threaten bowl position by the time you get to those spots.
Outstanding points. He's at Bryant Knox of OregonSportsNews.com. Make sure you check out his work. Make sure you check out the work he and Jared Wright have done this week on profiling the Portland Trailblazers. Brian, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I know it's been a while, and we're really glad you could come back for this episode and check out some NFL and college football stuff and some Blazers talk. Absolute pleasure having you on the show, my man.
Absolute pleasure being here. Always is.
We'll definitely need to check out some sports in the near future, get you on to see how the Dolphins are doing. Maybe see some stuff on what the Ducks are doing. I mean, we got a lot to talk about the next couple months.
And I got a lot to say. I can promise you that. So I'm always
I always count on it. All right. Well, for myself and Bryant and Gene, we're signing off for the night. But thank you guys for checking us out. Make sure you at Bryant on Twitter. He's at Bryant Knox. The show can be found at Fireside Sports, and Gene is at Producer Gene, but he's not on Twitter because he's not allowed yet. We'll get you that handle eventually, Gene. Thank you very much for tuning in. It's been a pleasure having you. Stay classy and stay tuned.